It's London, 1983, and two men have robbed a passerby on Clapham High Street. They're brought into Clapham Common Police Station. The two men are homeless and alcoholics. In the police station, they're put in a cell together. There's a third homeless man already in the cell. Within minutes of the cell door closing, cries and shouts can be heard coming from the cell.
Somebody shouted, "Governor, quick, down the cells."
Officers race to the cell, but by the time they arrive and open the door, they're too late. Inside the cell, one of the three men is dead.
A pair of knotted socks round his neck.
One of the other men is in shock, and the third man is sitting quietly in the corner.
He's cross-legged with bare feet.
The barefoot man is taken from the cell and questioned. Almost immediately, he confesses to the murder of his cellmate.
Small, skinny, bag of bones. He was twitching. Everything about him was moving.
Then he shocks the police officers interviewing him. The man in the cell wasn't his first murder, he says.
It was as much as we could do to keep up with what he was saying.
The barefoot man says that he has murdered many, many others.
Maybe 15 murders.
Some of those 15 murders, he said, he committed by pushing people under trains in the London Underground. The detectives believe they've taken a statement from Britain's most prolific serial killer. Only he wasn't British. He was Irish.
Irish Times, August 9th, 1983. Kieran Kelly, a Dublin tramp accused of murdering a Glaswegian, William Boyd, in a police cell in South London, has been remanded in custody following a court appearance at the weekend.
And that was it. A few small pieces in the papers in 1983 about Kieran Kelly, who emigrated to London and, according to himself, became a serial killer. After that, Kelly dropped out of the public gaze. That is, until the summer of 2015, when Kieran Kelly was back in the Irish papers again.
The Irish Examiner, 28th July 2015. Irishman killed on London Tube. A former detective with Scotland Yard has claimed police covered up an Irish serial killer who stalked and murdered on the London Underground.
Not only that, he was featured in the UK media too.
Was the Underground once stalked by a serial killer who pushed people from tube platforms to their deaths?
Now, there's a new book out called The London Underground Serial Killer. It's written by a retired detective, Jeff Platt. And Jeff Platt, the author, is in a studio in Manchester. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Good to talk to you.
The main claim of the retired policeman's book was that Kieran Kelly was indeed a serial killer, but that this fact was kept secret by the authorities.
Scotland Yard covered up the truth about a suspected serial killer who's thought to have pushed more than a dozen people to
their
deaths.
This is BBC Radio 4's flagship programme Today.
Jeff Platt alleges that Kieran Kelly confessed to carrying out the killings between 1953 and 1983, but was never prosecuted as the authorities feared invoking mass panic.
In the summer of 2015, this media attention forced the head of the London Police, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, to address the claims made about Kieran Kelly. He was dismissive.
I find that not very persuasive, if I'm honest. I just don't believe... Well, I can't say I don't believe it. I just find it... I'd take some persuading about it as a reason. But we have said that we'll contact him and let's see if we can get to the bottom of what he's said. The detail of it sounded quite convincing.
Well, it didn't sound convincing to me.
This is Robert Mulhern from Kildare, who's working in London as a journalist. Like many Irish journalists in the city, he was surprised when this story of an Irish serial killer broke in 2015.
I mean, why was the retired cop, Jeff Platt, the only person telling the story? Why wasn't it a bigger story? Maybe the cops were covering it up.
The documentary on One decided to find out, are all these stories true?
Did Kieran Kelly commit all these murders that Jeff Platt said he did? And is it possible that Kieran Kelly could have murdered someone here in Ireland?
Well, how are you doing?
Rathdowney, County Laois.
I'm from RT Radio 1.
This is where the Kieran Kelly story begins.
I'm down here today doing a story about this chap.
He was born and spent the first 7 years of his life here.
He's a Kelly, isn't he? Yeah. Serial killer in London, underground. Is it true, like?
Oh, the London Underground serial killer. Yeah, who'd know about that now? What's I say now?
You go up, you turn right, like. I think he lived out that road there, seemingly. Out that road, seemingly. That's where their family came from. On the edge of the town there.
One of those who remembers the Kelly family was Mark Whelan.
I knew his father. Martin Kelly was his name, was his father's name. He had a shop. It was a hut, more or less a hut. And he was selling sweets and chocolates and ice cream. And I used to play with the children, you know, in the streets.
What kind of games would you have been playing then, can you remember?
Well, I always remember it was in the springtime. And he had a sister. This chap that you're talking about, he had a sister. She had always had to carry the penknife. She used to go to the bird's nest and kill the young ones. And I thought she was very cruel at the time, but that's the truth of it.
The Kellys lived in Rathdowney during the depressed and difficult 1930s.
They say the Spanish Civil War was going on when we started going to school.
Mick Ryan, who went to national school with Kieran Kelly.
He was fair hair, so he wasn't small. And we looked on him as someone, well, he wasn't as well up as we were anyway. In terms of intellect, I suppose, yeah. He was slow, yeah. I said gawpy, that'd be another word for slow, yeah.
Mick Ryan said that one of the older children was minding Kieran Kelly when he was afraid to go to school.
I can remember him going home with Mick Brophy and leaving him into his own early, he'd say good luck to him there, and Kieran, relax, everything will be all right, see you tomorrow.
And then in 1937, when Kieran Kelly was just seven, his family left Rathdowney.
Do you remember what became of the parents, Martin Kelly?
Yes, they disappeared suddenly off the scene and gone to Dublin somewhere.
That somewhere in Dublin was in the south inner city. The address was 43 Harcourt Street, just up from Stephen's Green, near the famous Copperface Jack's nightclub.
Well, we discovered that the house on Harcourt Street is gone. And ironically, the building now is home of the Garda headquarters, the unit that investigates murders.
We know that the Kellys stayed in Harcourt Street for the next 20 years or so. The first public record of Kieran we can find in Dublin is a confirmation cert from Harrington Street Church in 1942. He was 12. After that, the next mentions of Kieran Kelly are both from 1953, one in Dublin and one in London. The London story is disturbing.
All night through, indeed longer than that, crowds have waited for this moment as the Golden Coach appears in view for the first time.
1953 was the year of the coronation of Britain's Queen Elizabeth. The start of a new era in British society. And if Kieran Kelly is to be believed, the start of a dark chapter in his own life. Kieran Kelly said that he travelled to London in 1953 for the coronation festivities, and the man he said that to was Geoffrey Platt, the retired policeman who wrote the book about him entitled The London Underground Serial Killer. Platt said that he gained Kieran Kelly's confidence while escorting him to and from various court appearances.
Geoff?
Yes?
How are you doing, Geoff?
Not bad.
I met Geoff Platt in Stoke-on-Trent.
Hi, Paula.
Robert Mulhern, journalist.
I have your book.
And one of the first things Geoff Platt told me was that Kieran Kelly's sexuality was a factor in him becoming a killer.
He told me that he was actually a homosexual. He didn't like homosexuals. And if any man made a homosexual advance to him, he would encourage him for a short while. Then, unfortunately, he would then use a broken bottle to actually kill the man.
He didn't use a bottle for his first murder. The first murder he said he committed was a friend of his, Christy Smith, who travelled over with him from Dublin. Kelly said that in 1953, the two of them ended up waiting for a train in Baker Street tube station.
As they're waiting on the train, Christy Smith came up and said, "Hey, Kelly, you know, about time you got married." He panicked. He realised that Christy Smith knew his family.
Geoffrey Platt says that Kieran Kelly was so terrified that he would be outed as a homosexual that he pushed Christy Smith under the train as it arrived into the station.
The problem with that story is there's no record of a death in Baker Street Station that year. There's no record of a Christy Smith being murdered in London that year. There's no record of a Christy Smith travelling over to London with Kieran Kelly from Dublin.
After his summer in London, Kieran Kelly went back to Dublin, where the next record of him is in the court reports.
Irish Times, October 7th, 1953. In the dock was Kieran Kelly, Harcourt Street, charged with having stolen from the Leinster School of Music a cello and a bow and a violin, all valued at £75. Detective Officer Lang said that they went to the boy's house and coming out, they saw Kelly some distance away. Apparently, he recognised them as he ran. He was struck by a motor van on the leg, but fortunately was not injured. Kelly ran into Charlemont Street and after a chase of 400 or 500 yards, they lost him. Later, Detective Officer Doris found Kelly in a tenement. Kelly was remanded until Saturday next on bail of £50. His father said that he would like to have him medically examined. He'd been acting strangely of late, and he, the father, did not wish to go bail for him at present.
Kieran Kelly is 26 at this stage, and he's caught several more times that year and over the next year for stealing and housebreaking and robbery, and he eventually ended up getting a 2-year sentence.
When he got out of jail in Ireland, Kieran Kelly headed back to London, where in 1961 he got married. He and his wife had 2 children.
That seems strange that he got married and had kids, given that we're told Kieran Kelly was gay. But you have to remember it was illegal to be gay at this time in England. He was in his 30s at this stage and his life seemed to have some stability.
He says he was working on building sites as a painter. Kieran Kelly's marriage broke up when his wife returned to her ex-husband. He ended up living on the streets and drinking heavily. That was in 1965, which was also the year when Kieran Kelly's criminal career took off in earnest.
Goes berserk and suddenly, at the age of 30, he suddenly starts developing a criminal record.
Now, much of this information is in Geoff Platt's book about Kieran Kelly, the London underground serial killer.
He gets arrested twice for armed robbery, sentenced at the Old Bailey.
But as he digs deeper into the story, Robert Mulhern is querying Platt's reliability.
He told me he was a detective.
This former detective says convicted murderer Kieran Kelly.
A former detective with Scotland Yard has claimed police covered up.
But I knew he never made that rank. He was a plainclothes constable. He also told me that he was involved in over 500 gun battles, even killing people in the line of duty. However, reliable sources said there was never any evidence of Platt discharging a police weapon. I also found out that he served a prison sentence for a hit-and-run accident, but he never disclosed any details about this to me. So that's Platt. But then when it came to the story of Kieran Kelly himself, he got his age wrong.
Kieran Patrick Kelly was born in 1923.
Kieran Kelly was actually born in 1930. And Geoff Platt said that Kieran Kelly went to Sing Street School in Dublin. But I found out that Sing Street School actually told Geoff Platt there was never any evidence of Kieran Kelly going to school there. I knew I needed to find a better witness to the Kieran Kelly case.
My name's Ian Brown. I was the detective inspector at Clapham Police Station.
Ian Brown was one of the most prominent detectives in London in the 1970s and 80s. He worked on cases involving the craze, the Brinksmat gold bullion robbery and breaking South American drugs links with the UK. He has never spoken to the press about the Kieran Kelly case. He's now retired, but Robert Mulhern tracked him down.
1965, there's an appearance in court at Lambeth for assaulting a police officer.
When I met Ian Brown, I asked him to take me through Kieran Kelly's rap sheet from the UK.
67, theft, possession of tablets, housebreaking. 68, forgery, drunken damage. 69, office breaking and robbery. 69, an armed robbery and was sent to Broadmoor.
Broadmoor is a high-security psychiatric hospital.
He underwent treatment. They found that there was nothing they could do with him and they released him. 1973...
When he was being interviewed by Ian Brown years later, he said that 1973 was the year he killed two people.
He confessed to us that he'd stabbed a man in Bournemouth. It was another tramp. We could find no record of that. He confessed to killing a man by the name of Scotch Jack and throwing him down some basement steps. Scotch Jack was found in the basement of an old building. He had head injuries, but that was equally consistent with him falling down the steps.
Then, 1975. This was the year that London was shocked at the murder of a failed businessman. His name was Hector Fisher, and his body was found close to a church in Clapham Common.
Now, the reason that the Hector Fisher story was so interesting and so shocking to people was that he sustained over 21 injuries. He was beaten and stabbed. And a rumour also went around that Fisher's genitals had been mutilated and that there was a sexual element to the crime.
Now, amongst the many people that were actually questioned on that day, one of them was Kelly. But there was no evidence to suggest that at that time that he had actually committed the murder.
Kieran Kelly escaped any connection with that case, but 2 years later his luck ran out when he was picked up for the murder of a man called Edward Toll in Kennington Park Cemetery.
He found a tramp sleeping on his tombstone. He didn't like that because he wanted to sleep there, so he had a piece of rope around his waist holding his trousers up. He took that off, he went over to the tramp, put it round his neck and garrotted him. As he walked away, another old tramp said, "Goodness gracious, Kelly, you might have killed him." He then went back again with the same piece of rope and garrotted him again and came back and said, "Have now."
Kieran Kelly was charged with Edward Toll's murder. He was 47 at this stage.
If he's to be believed, for the previous 20 years, he'd been on a murder crusade targeting men just like him, gay, homeless, and alcoholic. But by the end of 1977, here he was standing in the dock at the mighty centre of the British justice system, the Old Bailey, in London. It looked like Kieran Kelly's days of killing were over.
By the time he got to the Old Bailey, it was 6 months later, Kelly had been in prison all of that time, no drink, and was quite upright and a normal sort of person. The only evidence against him were old tramps who'd been drinking methylated spirits, had a limited recollection of that murder, and had been constantly drinking ever since. By the time they got them to the Old Bailey to give evidence, you can imagine that the jury found it very hard to believe these old tramps.
And so Kieran Kelly got off and he went back to his old ways. By 1980, when Kieran Kelly was 50, he was back in prison for robbery. He was released in 1982, but was almost immediately picked up again for pushing a man called Taylor onto the tube line at Tooting Beck Station.
The train actually managed to stop before hitting Taylor.
Retired detective Ian Brown.
Taylor fell on the track. Luckily missed the electric lines, and the oncoming train managed to see him and stop. The best of my recollection on that one is that James Taylor refused to prosecute. He said it was an accident and Kelly had just bumped into him and pushed him, or they'd been arguing, and it certainly wasn't an intentional act.
Did you believe that?
No.
And he was acquitted of that offence.
Kelly's court-appointed solicitor for this case was John Slater.
Actually, one of the things we found out was that he was doing jobs from time to time. And the impression was that he was just hanging around on park benches. He wasn't. I mean, he was doing painting jobs like that, and obviously topping up his dole money.
When I met John Slater, I was curious to know how he and his client got on, especially given how different they were. Slater, a professional lawyer, and Kelly, a homeless Irishman and now a career criminal around London.
I got on with him perfectly well. I could easily discuss things with him and get instructions, and there was no problem. I didn't have a bad relationship with him. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have really wanted to have met him socially or anything like that. But as far as clients go, I got on with him perfectly well. might have helped that I supplied him with kebabs and cigarettes, but in those days you had to do for criminal clients. And I've since found out that he was known as Nosy Kelly, and I can see why he was called Nosy Kelly. He had a very pronounced nose.
The connection between the London Underground and homeless people is significant, according to Robert Mulhern.
But basically, the Underground is where you went to stay warm. Tramps and homeless people would ride up and down the tube lines to try and avoid the weather. But they also committed a lot of crimes against commuters, but also against each other. And solving these kinds of crimes has been particularly difficult for the police. Because of their chaotic lifestyles, mental health issues, drinking, and so on. But in Kieran Kelly's case, he almost catalogued his crimes against homeless people. For example, he told Ian Brown that in 1982, he had killed another homeless man in Balham.
Again, he'd been drinking with a man who he couldn't remember the name of, and he got upset with him, went away, bought a bottle of white spirit, which he poured down the guy's neck.
Kieran Kelly was never picked up for that murder because the man died in hospital the next day and no connection could be made between Kelly and the white spirits. And then there was another case he got off when he pushed someone else under an underground train.
That case never went to trial because the suggestion was that it was two tramps who were drunk arguing or just pushing each other.
Robert Mulhern is talking to Ian Brown to find out if Kieran Kelly is a serial killer, but by the time they get to 1983 on Kelly's rap sheet, there's only one thing that's clear.
This litany of offences, petty theft, more serious robbery, accusations of attempted murder, all it proves is that by the time we get to 1983, Kieran Kelly is not a convicted murderer. But in August 1983, that was about to change.
Kelly and a guy called McManus, another tramp, were messing about in Clapham High Street when they went up to an old guy and stole his watch and his wedding ring. Luckily, there was a policeman nearby. He was called over and Kelly and McManus were both arrested. They were taken to Clapham Police Station. Now, the night before, another old tramp, a guy called William Boyd, had been brought in for drunk and disorderly. He was a really old rancid tramp, well known in the area, never any problem to anybody. He was put in the cell. The following day, when Kelly and McManus were arrested, the station officer didn't want to contaminate three cells, so he put all three in together.
This is when William Boyd was strangled with a pair of socks. Because he was barefoot, Kieran Kelly was identified as the killer and taken out into an interview room.
Confessed quite readily to that. In actual fact, his words were, he was getting on my nerves because he kept snoring, but he won't snore no more. Kelly was dancing up and down, pretending to shadow box, and then suddenly stopped and took the ring that he'd stolen from the old man the day before from underneath his tongue and gave it to me.
Ian Brown remembers that Kieran Kelly's behaviour in the interview room was bizarre.
He would run round the room, he'd dance, he'd do all sorts of weird things, having lost the train of where we were. He'd just jump up and do stupid things, throw a bit of abuse and then sit down perfectly calmly again. I'm not a medical man, so I don't know if he was schizophrenic, he was... But any name that you want to put to him, he most probably was.
So during the course of the day talking to this retired detective, he spoke about procedure and protocol. But actually, in the case of Kieran Kelly, it was a complete shot in the dark that broke the case open.
Right out of the blue, I just said to him, now tell me about all the other murders then, Kelly. And he said, which one are you talking about? And I said, well, you just tell me. He said, you're talking about Fisher, aren't you? And I said, yep, that's the one, not having a clue what he was talking about. But I nodded to the sergeant, who jumped up and went out the room to find out who the hell Fisher was. And he came back with a scribbled piece of paper telling me that a guy called Fisher had been murdered in the back of Clapham Church on Clapham Common. So we now have Kelly telling us about a murder that was never solved. So I start to question him about that. And he said, I was too clever for you. You didn't realise it was a robbery. I said, no, you're far too clever, Kelly. He said, I covered it up. And I said, and how did you do that? He said, well, he had a lot of money in his pocket, but I left £40 in his pocket so you wouldn't know he'd been robbed. So we get all the papers out and find that when the pathologist went to the scene, he took two £20 notes, £40, out of the pocket, which is pretty good confirmation that Kelly knew what he was talking about. Ask him why he did it, and he said he wanted my arse, so I stabbed him, and I stabbed him in the bollocks.
The next day, Kelly's old solicitor, John Slater, was driving to work when a news story came on the radio.
A man has appeared in court charged with the murder of a fellow prisoner at Clapham Police Station.
And I half jokingly said to my partner, my professional partner, I wonder whether Kieran's responsible for it. I remember I got a phone call at about 5:15 that evening saying there's a bloke in Clapham Police Station wants to see you. So that is the sort of relationship I had with him. It was not a bad relationship. I mean, he trusted me.
Kieran Kelly was charged with the murder of the man in the cell, William Boyd. He was also charged with one of the murders to which he had confessed, that of the businessman, Hector Fisher.
It was an unusual case. I mean, I've had several murder cases, but I don't think I've ever before or since had a multiple murder case.
His trial was scheduled for 1984. Despite his confessions to the police, Kieran Kelly pleaded not guilty to both charges in court. The judge, Justice Davies, commented on Kieran Kelly's lifestyle.
There is a world of difference, shall we say, between the grounds of Buckingham Palace and the Clapham Common at night. The deceased himself was in the company of people you would not expect to find strolling on the lawn of that palace at a garden party. There is enough evidence for you to conclude that it is the haunt of a type of people I have been describing, and no doubt violence often breaks out there.
The court case is the first opportunity we have to hear Kieran Kelly's voice, at least according to police notes of his interviews.
I may have been sleeping rough on Clapham Common since May of this year, and since the date of the murder I have been pulled in a few times by the police. As I said, I know the man who got killed. I did not know him personally, but I've seen him around a lot. It was me that done Fisher. You know that, don't you? He was a dirty old bastard. He used to dress up in women's clothes. A fucking puff.
If you recall the Hector Fisher murder, one thing that really upset the public were the reports that his genitals were mutilated. And when Kieran Kelly confessed to the case, this is what he said he had done.
It was me who cut him in the bollocks.
But when I looked at the court records in the archive, I was really surprised. In his summing up, the judge described the injuries that had actually been found on the body during the autopsy.
Well, the defendant said he had told the police that he cut the man about the bollocks. And one thing that is certain in this case is that nobody did, because there was no injury there. That's the medical evidence.
Kelly himself is an unreliable witness in retelling the events of his own life.
I didn't make it up.
Kieran Kelly may have made up the story about mutilating Fisher, but the jury believed he was a killer and they convicted him of two murders, the man who wore women's clothes and the man who was murdered in the cells. It was 1984 and he was 54 years of age and Kieran Kelly was sentenced to life. And because he was sentenced to life, there was no incentive for Detective Ian Brown and his colleagues to go back and investigate the other murders that Kelly had claimed.
Once you get to a point where you've got two convictions for murder and the sentence is going to be life imprisonment, there's absolutely no point, financially or otherwise, in carrying on with another X number of murders.
And what do you feel now from the Kieran Kelly that you met and had professional dealings with, that this collection of cases that are being attached to his name, do you think he would have been capable of those crimes?
I think he would have been capable of it. I have grave doubts about whether he did it.
John Slater, Kieran Kelly's solicitor.
I mean, I think he was a bit of a fantasist. You have to bear in mind that it was during the era when there had been more than one multiple murders. I mean, Peter Sutcliffe's, of course, was the most famous, but there was also Dennis Nielsen at about the same time. And I did wonder whether he wanted to get infamy as a result of being a mass murderer.
Now, in the book, the word BS is used a good bit because a lot of people thought he was a fantasist.
But where does that leave Jeff Platt's book, which spurred the latest interest in Kieran Kelly's story?
And I found a number of incidents where people had fallen with tube trains. The interesting thing was that all of them had been talking to Kieran Kelly at the time.
Platt has just finished a new edition of the book, and he now says that Kieran Kelly killed 31 people. He says that after the last book came out, seven families got in touch with him. These were people whose family members had died under tube trains, apparently by suicide. But now, having read Platt's book, they believe their loved ones had been pushed by Kieran Kelly.
This is amazing evidence. So I asked Jeff Platt, could he put me in touch with some of these families so I could talk to them? And he said no problem. He just didn't have his notes with him at the time. But within 24 hours, he came back to me and said not one of the families wanted to talk. I found that really hard to believe, because if you were one of the families who lost somebody on the tube line and you thought they were murdered, not committed suicide, then I would have expected that they would have been glad of the publicity.
After being found guilty in 1984, Kieran Kelly was sentenced to life in prison. He spent the next 20 years being moved around the British prison system. He finally ended up in the north of England, near Durham, in Frankland Prison. He died of respiratory illness in 2001.
Kieran Kelly was 71. He left behind an estranged wife and a son and a daughter, but there is no record of his wife or his daughter. However, in 1989, his son Dennis was killed in a bar fight in Clapham, just down the road from where Kelly himself murdered.
In the end, even though he claimed to have killed around 15 people, Kieran Kelly was only convicted of two murders. If he was a serial killer, Kelly doesn't have the fame or notoriety of Dr. Harold Shipman or the Yorkshire Ripper.
How are you doing? Rob Mulhern is my name. Are you the resident of the house here?
He's not remembered where he once lived.
A serial killer.
Who used to live here.
Don't
tell my girlfriend, there was, he's going to get crazy.
He's not remembered on the underground network where he once pushed people onto the tracks.
No, I've never actually heard of a serial killer as such. I've never heard of that one before. I'm afraid, yeah.
And back in the home place of Rathdowney, Kieran Kelly was also largely forgotten. That is, until 1993.
That's where the water pipe is, where that pier is now.
When Nicky Marr was digging in his garden.
And we found bones in the hedge.
Nicky's family had moved into the Kellys' house when they moved out in the late 1930s.
So as I saw the bones, and this, a neck with a noose around it, with a wire noose around it, you know, and a skull, you know. I rang the guards and two of them came around and they stayed there for a while and then they called the doctor.
Niall O'Doherty was the doctor who was called that day.
Maybe at the time I wondered, could it be a baby?
And we did that, we found the bones.
He's chatting to Nicky Marr at the scene where the skeleton was found.
Niall said them, thought it, they could be human, that's exactly what Niall said. Two guards came and took them over, rushed around, took away the bones. And I said to them, what was it? And they said, a donkey. I remember saying it was a bloody small donkey.
It was a rope.
And a rope around its neck, yeah. A noose around its neck, you know.
I would have presumed the skull of a donkey wouldn't be just roundish. There would be a snout on it.
It certainly wasn't a donkey, no.
Nicky and the doctor never heard from the guards again.
Once at the other, usher, whoever did this anyhow, he'd be dead himself long before now. And off they went. And that's the last we heard.
Despite the fact that they had taken away a skeleton with a wire noose around the neck, and the fact that they had taken it from the garden of a family whose son was subsequently convicted of two murders.
Hello,
sorry, I got cut off there a moment ago. I wonder, could you put me through to the press office?
So I got in touch with the guards and contacted Port Leash and headquarters in the Phoenix Park several times over the last 3 months. And to date, the Gardaí have not gotten back to us in relation to the skeleton in Kieran Kelly's garden. And we're still left wondering, if Kieran Kelly was convicted of murder in Britain and he was over and back between England and Ireland through this period, could it be possible that he murdered in Ireland? And that's a question that still remains unanswered.
The last memory of Kieran Kelly's family in Rathdowney is of his mother, Annie.
Annie used to come and visit the area every year, but she never actually went into the house that she used to live in.
Agnes said to her, would you not call in? No, she said, she'd never call in. He came, I looked at it, turned the car and we went away again.
And finally, what about the retired policeman, Jeff Platt?
The ironic thing about this story is, the media took Jeff Platt's book at face value. The book itself has proved to be unreliable and poorly researched. But the interesting thing is, the book brought about such publicity that the British government and police were forced to revisit the Kelly cases. So the British Transport Police told me that they've gone back and revisited 24 cases previously linked to Kieran Kelly, and nothing new has emerged.
A former detective, Jeff Platt, alleges that Kieran Kelly...
That leaves Jeff Platt's claim that got most publicity.
...that Scotland Yard covered up the truth about a suspected serial killer who's thought to have pushed...
If there wasn't a cover-up, how come we didn't know that Kieran Kelly claimed to have had a murder spree? Detective Ian Brown says there's a very simple answer to that question.
They were tramps. They were alcoholics. They were sleeping on Clapham Common. And tramps die for many, many reasons. If you find a tramp with a head injury, the first conclusion is usually, well, he's most probably fallen over stone drunk. Kelly was just a tramp murderer. He hated tramps. He was one. He hated alcoholics. He was one. He hated homosexuals. He was one. In the end, Kelly put his hands up to maybe 13, 14, 15 murders. We proved maybe 5 or 6 murders. No more.
Where then does that leave Jeff Platt's claim that Kieran Kelly murdered 31 people?
I think that figure of 31 is really hard to believe. But I don't want to dismiss Jeff Platt outright because he's the one that brought the Kieran Kelly story back into the public arena. So I decided to arrange one last meeting with him.
Jeff! Jeff, how are you doing?
Not bad, not bad.
I wanted to ask him how he arrived at this new figure of 31, but I didn't even get to ask that question.
So in the last couple of weeks, I've met with John Slater, or I've had conversations with John Slater and Ian Brown and spoken to them kind of extensively about the case. And there's a lot of variance in what they have to say and what you have to say. You weren't in the interview room in the station, according to Ian Brown.
I wasn't present during the main interview, I'll grant you that, yeah. Okay. Doesn't mean I don't know the facts. As I say, I spent more time than they did actually investigating the case and everything like that. So I spent time with Kelly, I spent time chasing up all the facts and everything like that.
And I was just going back through some of my notes, and you told me a number of times that you were the only person alive who knew Kelly.
I think so.
But obviously Ian Brown knew him, and obviously John Slater knew him personally. And they're both still alive.
Yes, I grant you. I mean...
Okay, but I'm sorry to tell you.
At this point in the interview, Jeff Platt reaches down, grabs his bag, and walks away.
Jeff? Are we not having a conversation anymore, Jeff? Jeff, are those questions not fair?
We're finished.
We're finished? Why? Why, Jeff? Are they not fair questions? The thing about it is that this book has caused upset to people who lost people on the tube line. So it's only my job to ask these questions and try and get to the bottom of it.
Jeff Platt then disappeared down the steps and into Clapham Common tube station. Over the last 6 months, I've got as close as I ever wanted to Kieran Kelly. 15 years after his death, thousands of hours of police work has been spent trying to find out how many people Kieran Kelly actually killed. And that's just in Britain. And the authorities here still have no idea of the extent of his crimes in Ireland. In this documentary, we've been chasing figures, trying to find out how many people he murdered. But, if you think about it, it's a sort of macabre numbers game. Despite the fact that the story was misrepresented, overreported and overblown, the speculation about Kelly's crimes weren't unfounded. He was a dangerous killer. And probably Ireland's most prolific serial killer so far.